Hi, I'm Megan Smith, the television contributing editor for BlogHerd.com, and today I have the pleasure of interviewing Tim Reed and Tom Dreesen. You may remember Tim Reed as the hip black disc jockey Venus Flytrap on the hit TV show WKRT in Cincinnati, or as the star and executive producer of the critically acclaimed show Frank's Place. Today, he's a director and producer with his own production company, New Millennium Studios, in Virginia. You may remember comic Tom Dreesen from his many appearances on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, or as the opening act for performers such as Sammy Davis Jr. and Frank Sinatra. Today, he's a frequent guest on The Late Show with David Letterman and works 200 days a year as a comedian, master of ceremonies, and motivational speaker. What you may not know is that in the late 60s and early 70s, during the height of the Civil Rights Movement, Tim and Tom had the first interracial stand-up comedy act and toured all over the country. The pair had a lot in common. Both grew up in harrowing circumstances, Tim in Norfolk, Virginia, Tom one of eight, as he says, raggedy-ass poor kids who often had to fend for themselves in the small town of Harvey, Illinois. When Tim and Tom met as adults, they teamed up to create an anti-drug program for the local JCs. That successful pairing eventually led to their six-year-long comedy act. Their material incorporated the racial upheaval that was going on at the time and was totally unique. Now the story of how they got together, what went on backstage, and how their individual careers developed separately is chronicled in their new book, Tim and Tom, An American Comedy in Black and White. Welcome, Tim Reed and Tom Dreesen. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I'm just so impressed with that introduction. I didn't know Tim did all those things.
I didn't know that either until I really started looking them up. But
I'm exhausted. I think they're very old.
I have to tell you, reading this book was like kind of a flashback to my childhood TV watching. Mm-hmm. Everything you were describing, I was like, oh, I saw that. Oh, yeah, I saw that. Oh, I remember when he was on Tonight Show. Oh, I remember that. But first, let me start with something a little topical. You guys were recently on Jay Leno, and Jay Leno was one of the people who was coming up and up and coming when you guys were touring. What do you think about NBC's decision to move The Tonight Show to primetime at 10 p.m. next fall?
I don't know who you want to answer it first, but I will. My opinion,
that's fine.
It was genius. It was absolute genius.
Yeah,
because I know the whole story of how they railroaded Jay in the beginning and signed that five-year contract, and then when Conan heard about it, he said, that's it, I'm out of here. My contract's up in 2 years. I'm out of here.
Right.
I'm not waiting 5 years. So then they called Jay back in and told him, you're leaving in 5 years. And Jay said, well, can we make it my idea that it looks like I'm retiring? Oh, yeah, sure, we'll do that. And then before he got to his office, they released to the press that they're bringing Jay down, bringing Conan down.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought Jay got railroaded. Now, in the meantime, he's been number one in late night for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, Fox is now interested in him. ABC certainly interested in him. And then NBC had a problem. How do you get rid of the number one late night talk show host? You know, how do you justify that?
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in Denver, when I read that at the airport, I said, it's bringing him down to 10 o'clock. First of all, they're saving millions of dollars on production that they normally spend on that time.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, for Jay, it'll give him 2 million more viewers. So if you're an author or a movie maker or whatever you are, an actor, and you're trying to promote something, whose show do you want to go on? One that has 2 million more viewers than the other shows?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it was genius on their part. They save face.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tim, what do you think?
I don't care about Jay. I just wonder if it's going to mean that I get a job.
Well, if you have to plug another
book, he's got enough money. He can't buy any more cars.
Speaking of the book, tell me about the book. Why? How did that come about? Why now?
Well, it was really Tom's idea. He pestered me for about 10 years to do the book, and I kept saying, no, 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 I don't care. They don't care. Let's just keep moving on. And finally, one day, I could hear the passion in his voice, and I said, okay, as long as we find someone to join us who will help us make the book compelling and you know, help us with the narrative, because I didn't want it to be just a typical book where, you know, and then they did this, and then in 19 so-and-so they did that. You know, most of these autobiographical books are just show and tell.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it to have some sort of storytelling narrative theme to it,
mm-hmm.
and wasn't sure that just he and I could just do it alone. And fortunate enough for us, Tom knew Ron Rappaport, brought him on board, and that's how it all started. And it took us about just under 2 years to get it written. Well, it took us a little longer to find someone who would publish it, and then once that was found, about just under 2 years to get it done.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the book. I really got emotionally caught up in it and what was going on with you guys, and I really felt the relationship. I thought it was really well done.
Thank you. I agree. Going back to what Tim said, Tim always looks forward. He always has that. Let's go forward, and what happened in the past has happened. And that was his one line to me. He said, they weren't interested in us then. Why would they be interested in us now?
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was, I always tell the story, I really believed it was going to be a good book. I really believed it would make a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
I went to see a movie called Remember the Titans, and I was sitting in the movie, and there was a line in the movie that the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and that was when the white guy who befriended the black guy, if you remember the whole movie, but when he was in the hospital paralyzed with a spinal cord injury, and his black friend come running in the hospital to see him, and the nurse said, you can't go in there, son, that's for family only. And the white boy in the room said, nurse, what's wrong with you? Can't you see he's my brother? You know, after all the hardships they endured, that relationship, and that I walked out, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, I walked out and I got Tim on the phone. I said, we've got to do that movie, or that book, because that's our story, you know.
I think it would make a great movie, absolutely. Both of you were married and had families when you decided to team up. Tim, your wife was very supportive. Tom, yours not so much. What was that like, Tom, when you walk in the house and say, honey, I'm going on the road with this black guy and we're going to do a comedy act?
Well, it would have been a lot worse if I'd have said, honey, I'm going on the road with this black woman.
Which was his first choice, by the way.
Yeah. But, unfortunately, what was her name? I was my mind just blank. Unfortunately, Leslie Uggams was busy at the time. It wasn't that I was going on the road with a black guy or a white guy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was that she did not want me to go in the show business.
Mm-hmm.
She was a small town girl who wanted me to work in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
Go into such a precarious business as show business. When I was in the insurance business, selling life insurance, she thought it was the dumbest idea she'd ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't nothing to do with black or white, because she liked Tim. She knew Tim. In fact, I'm convinced now they had an affair. My son looks a lot like Tim. she couldn't believe that I would give up this and go into such a precarious business as show business.
Uh-huh.
That's all.
With all the hot button racial material you guys perform, there never seemed to be any racial tension between the two of you. Why do you think that was?
Well, I think we were so involved in the struggle of trying to make it as an entertainment, and our backgrounds had prepared us for all kinds of confrontational situations that I think we just focused on standing together and fighting. And I don't think the odds against us, not so much he and I. We knew that if anything was going to work, we had to stick together and face it together. So it's hard to explain. In that time, it just never really seemed to be of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
No, Tim always says, and he's right, we were very comfortable in our own skins as to who we were.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Tim and I, we rarely ever had any, if we had discussions about race, but we never got angry with each other about race. It was creative differences. But if anything, the harder they hit us, the more we dug in, as opposed to backing down. On the fourth time we ever went on stage, a guy put a lit cigarette out in Tim's face and tried to beat me. If we didn't quit then, the fourth time, if you'd have said, well, yeah, you are together 4 years, and by that time you knew, the fourth time should have scared us both back.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't. So, it was never about race. The other thing that Tim has pointed out many times, when a young girl who saw us said, you guys are so funny, you ought to become a comedy team, she didn't say you got to become a black and white comedy team.
Mm-hmm.
So she said you ought to become a comedy team. All we were into in those days was, let's go out and get some laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make people laugh. It wasn't about, let's go change their attitude toward race. If they got that, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't what our goal. Our goal was to make them laugh.
And that's probably why your comedy was so good, too. Yeah,
I agree.
Because that was the ultimate, you weren't trying to put a message out there. You were trying to make people laugh and put out good comedy. You, Tom, were more of a natural stand-up comic, it seems, than Tim was. And according to the book, that's part of what eventually led to the breakup of the act. What gave you the satisfaction from stand-up for you, Tom?
Well, for me, there's no greater joy in the world than to be a stand-up comedian. For me, I'm an impatient sort of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mean that I could write something during the day and that evening go up on a stage and try it out, and if it works, the overwhelming joy you get. Stand-up comedy is the highest of highs and the lowest of lows.
Mm-hmm.
The highest of highs when it works, and the lowest of lows when it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
But think of an artist. They paint these beautiful. Tim's a sculptor, and he's very artistic in that area. But maybe his work would maybe get appreciated by a few, maybe by thousands after he's dead and gone, or millions, you know, like
mm-hmm.
paint. But a stand-up comic, mm-hmm. the moment he writes that joke, that evening he can go see how that painting flourishes. It's just the most exciting, to me, profession on the planet.
Wow. It's funny because I remember one of your routines, the difference between white girls and black girls when they're jumping rope.
Yeah.
could you give me that routine there? And...
Well, I think I did it on my first Tonight Show, and I can't. It was something to the effect that how growing up watching how the black girls jump rope and how the white girls jump rope. You know, the white girls would jump rope with like one rope, and it'd be down in the valley where the green grass grows, you know, something like that. Black girls would jump rope with like five ropes all going at the same time. You know, I'm alive, I'm jumping with five, you got a bald headed mama, that ain't no jive, you know. They called it double dutch, if you remember, Megan.
Yes,
but watching them was unbelievable.
Yes,
know?
Yes. Tim, I've heard you say that now with Barack Obama being elected,
mm-hmm.
first black president of the United States, which is fabulous, black men and black comedians are going to have to clean themselves up. You said brothers are going to have to pull up their pants and stop showing the nasty drawers,
mm-hmm.
and comics going to have to give up the F word. Mm-hmm. We rely too much on cursing in comedy.
Right.
I was thrilled to hear you say that. I was saying amen all up and down the block. Why do you feel that way?
Well, it's time, for one, and secondly, you know, when Cosby said it, I'm not the only person who feels that way.
Right.
I think
mm-hmm.
Cosby was the first to say it and took all of the heat from it. You know,
yeah.
as a matter of fact, you know, they focused on Cosby and not what he was saying, the message, you know, and so it's time that, as an elder, it's time that I do what elders did for me. I mean, back in the day when I was running around the street trying to be some kind of little teenage hoodlum,
mm-hmm.
it was the elders who said, hey, boy, why don't you just clean your act up? I mean, they weren't afraid of us. They
mm-hmm.
would say, now, we didn't necessarily listen to all of that,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
you have to hear it. And all I'm saying to the young guys is that they've crossed the line. They've erased the line. And I said this to some of the younger guys. I was on the Foxhole with Jamie Foxx. I brought
mm-hmm.
it up. And they don't like to hear it. But
mm-hmm.
the truth of the matter is, you know, you can't, you got to give up the B word and the hoes and all that stuff
mm-hmm.
because it has no place in the future. It has no place in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are going to still use it. Some comics, you know, vulgar is vulgar.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you want to move and be about change, then you have to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
think that comics who are doing, I've already seen some of the comics. I saw some of the, like, I hate Chocolate News.
Mm-hmm.
And as I watch it and I see him do this stuff about Obama, he's still doing the ancient cooking chicken in the bathtub kind of jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, about what the White House is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't that guy.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
is a new sheriff. It ain't the same kind of sheriff that we've always had. It ain't the same white sheriff. It ain't the same black sheriff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is a whole new deal. We've never had anything like this.
Right,
we never
right.
even allowed ourselves to dream of this possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to march into this and feel proud about it, then we have to reflect, look at ourselves and say, how do we be a part of this? How can we enhance the value of this? And one way is not be funny. We got to do humor about the first family.
Mm-hmm.
But let's do it in context to where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not keep dragging that old Mom's Maybelline, that old Pygmy Markham routine
mm-hmm.
into the 21st century. It's
mm-hmm.
time to change.
Mm-hmm.
Be funny,
mm-hmm.
but you just got to change.
Well, Tom, for example, there's all these white comics now who are saying, oh, you know, we can't do comedy about Obama. It's too hard. He's too clean. He's too, you know, whatever. What do you think about that?
Well, they can't do anything stereotypical. Tim just explained exactly why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of who he is, but you can do humor about his policies, about the other day he did this, believe me, I'm an Italian, I'm an Irish-Italian, but I always think of myself more as an Italian. We've never had an Italian president,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's so much prejudice in this nation against us Italians, I just can't stand it, but